Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our 5th season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Well, you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to another episode brought to you by SportsShoes.com. As always, Neil Gawley returns to the podcast today, fresh off a silver medal at the World Indoors over 1,500 metres. And of course, his outdoor opener as well over in Kingston at Grand Slam Track. So I sat down with Neil to chat through the last couple of years. It's been a while since we spoke to him previously. So Neil gives a great insight into Grand Slam from an athlete's perspective, and also talks about his training and racing over the past few years. So loads to look forward to in this one. Enjoy the episode with Neil, and we'll catch you guys very, very soon.
Neil Gawley on the podcast, fresh off of a Grand Slam. Fourth place overall, Neil, or fifth place overall?
Ended up fifth place overall. I don't know how that happened. I was fourth in both events.
Fourth,
but
yeah.
Ended up fifth. Getting first or second is worth so many points, so I guess I got trumped that way. I was close to third, but fifth in the end.
Is it worth too many points? What was the discussions on the ground about that kind of 12 for the win and 8 for second? Is that too much of a swing?
You know, I actually like it. It didn't suit me at all as being someone who can kind of do both fairly well. It would have been better for me if, like, you know, finishing middle of the pack was worth more. But honestly, I get it. Like, it promotes going for the win. It promotes, like, the specialist to be able to really go at their own event. The likes of, you know, Marco winning the 800, it was, you know, in his best interest to make that hard and go try win the thing himself, so that he finished, well, second overall. So it means winning your event's important. So I understand it didn't really help me this time, but that's all good.
You had two good runs. I want to know when you got the call up quite late, didn't you? Was it after World Indoors or just before World Indoors you got announced?
No, I actually knew about it in February. For whatever reason, I think they were just kind of teasing a lot of the announcements. And then there was, yeah, I think, one big day where they announced a lot of people in terms of the challengers. But no, I kind of knew for a while. So actually, it had been in my plans for quite a long time. It was something that I wanted to do, was to have a big indoor season. And if I was being sneaky about it, yeah, just do a Grand Slam meet off the back of the indoor season and have that as one big long season where I can kind of reset now after having raced quite a bit the last couple of months and done a lot of travel.
No, that makes a lot of sense, because you definitely built throughout the indoor season compared to, you know, when you're opening up with a 3K and stuff. You definitely got... How was that 3K? You're smiling.
Yeah, that 3K was, I think in the past I really would have panicked a lot, because it was one of those where everything had been perfect in training, and I opened up at the New Balance meet in Boston and really felt that I was in the kind of shape where I could get close to challenging for the win for that race and hopefully run around 7:30 if the pace was honest, and just did not have it whatsoever. And there were no excuses at all, like the preparation had been perfect. So you have to walk away from that one thinking, you know, what is going wrong here? Because I didn't have anything I could think about. I suppose in hindsight, I was probably just tired from the sheer amount of work I was doing. I mean, it was deliberate that I was working so hard in January and February, but I just didn't realise it was going to have such an effect in that first race. But thankfully, didn't panic, just stayed the course and didn't change any plans whatsoever. And yeah, it got better every race from then on. It was a bit of a slow start, but That's the way you'd rather it go rather than you the opposite way around, of course.
Well, you are notoriously good for building throughout seasons, though. And we don't, like these days, we don't see it that much. Everyone just comes out within two races. They're running PBs and national records, and then they kind of go away in a training block again. And then we see them at major championships. Whereas you are someone who does build really well throughout the season.
Yeah, it's definitely the way I'd rather do it. It's the right approach. Usually, I actually felt last year was the opposite. It was because I was so behind in training that I think I rushed things a little bit. And actually, during 2024, I opened up the outdoor season at pre and ran a lot better, like a lot better than I thought I was going to. There, running a good mile, but it was kind of a bit of a curse in disguise in a sense, because I was fresh at that point and had all this fitness from cross training, what have you, but there really wasn't like a big base there, I don't think. And so a lot of the fitness I felt that I had in the early part of the summer last year, British champs, all the rest of it, I felt like by the time it got to Paris, actually, it was dwindling a little bit. And there were signs of it in training that I was ignoring, just in some of the more sort of threshold stuff we're doing or the more aerobic stuff we were doing. There were signs that the fitness isn't quite what it was earlier in the year. But ignored it, but it did come back to bite me, I thought, over three rounds in Paris. So this year, you know, being healthy and knock on wood, it'll remain that way. It's definitely more the intention to have my better races later in the season when, I've got that base behind me and I've sharpened up eventually.
I'm intrigued. We'll touch on Paris a little bit, but what that looks like as an athlete, I think, you know, a lot of people listening, coaches, athletes would have been there where they are ignoring, you know, the signs which are maybe showing you haven't quite got the strength or, you know, in some cases you haven't quite got the speed. What's going through your head mentally? How do you kind of navigate that and stay, you know, you must have had to kid yourself a little bit going into Paris. You know, you stay hopeful, you stay optimistic, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, equally, there had been a lot of really good signs, for example, going into Paris. When you have a plan and you're sticking to it and you're not really going to change it a whole lot based on what's happening in training, you sometimes do have to kid yourself a little bit. If a session goes poorly, if something isn't quite where you'd want it to be, you have to kid yourself sometimes, because I've had it so many times in the past where a session has been a complete red herring. I've had a terrible session and, you know, 10 days later run big PB. Like it doesn't always correlate. So you have to be aware of that as an athlete. And some people hang their head on, you know, specific sessions too much. Like, if I can't do this session, then I can't do this race. And it's just not true, because you never know how you're going to feel when you freshen up and when you're actually prepared for a race situation. So there were signs going into Paris that maybe the aerobic side had dwindled just a little bit. But equally, I think the mistake we made is I felt like I was behind on sharpness. And actually, that came around really quickly to the point that I did a time trial actually a week out from Paris and ran just under 1:44 for 800. About a week out from Paris, I had Dan Stepney pace me on the bike, and really ran a time trial that I didn't think I didn't think I was that sharp. And so there were signs like that. There was like, oh my goodness, we are really ready to go here. But I think I was more sharp than I was strong. Jeff was timing it, Whiteman, and he got me at 1:43.9, which would have been, you know, a huge PB if I was just doing it in a race. But having a bike pacer, it's a bit different. It's maybe a bit easier for them to break the wind for you, so you can take it with a pinch of salt. There were signs there that I was really sharp, but yeah, maybe just didn't quite have the strength, which is actually the more important factor over three hard rounds too.
That time trial 800's becoming quite famous of yours. I thought you were alluding to the one. There's a video of you on YouTube as well, do a time trial 800 in Scotland.
Yeah. Callum from Stride Athletics came along for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably just the conversion for doing it in the Greenock in the wind and the cold to doing it in Chiavenna in the warm, perfect conditions, like nice fast track. It was probably the same time trial, to be honest, 1:46 versus 1:43.
Yeah, because that was impressive. What was the time frame on that? Was that before British Champs then, that one?
That one was before British Champs. I really do like an under-distance effort about 7 days out. It feels like it really primes me and gets me feeling sharp for a 1500. So that's become a big thing going into a championship race, is to do something like that, to sort of prime for that 1500. Makes it feel a bit easier, the pace of it.
Defo, let's talk about Paris. Were you content with the result?
No, if I'm honest, I was a bit disappointed in the way I performed in the final itself. I had to take some time, though, because although the immediate reaction was disappointment, ending up 10th when there were signs that, you know, I was ready for a lot more. At the same time, given how much time I had to prepare for it, for some context, I spent kind of most of the injured with two stress reaction injuries that took me out most of the winter. So I didn't start running properly until about the 1st of April, and was quite experimental with how much cross training I was doing, and really spent a lot of time on the bike and other methods, but mainly the bike, putting in a lot of sort of threshold time, and really just everything was aerobic. There was nothing kind of powerful that I was doing on the bike. It was all just aerobic stuff, really, and just seeing if I could develop that system while I wasn't running. And yeah, it left me with not much time to prepare in terms of running, and I didn't have a huge base. So actually, given the context of how little time I had to prepare, going up against guys that, you know, would have had a much smoother build up, I ended up being pretty proud of the way I competed. It just, the immediate reaction was I thought I was ready for more.
It sounds like an incredible result given the circumstance and given the era that you're in as well. Like, the, you know, that top four is just, do you look at that? And because when I was doing a little bit of research as well, it was apparent, watch that great video with Scottish Athletics, you back at your home club, you've made out of 12 finals, you've made 11, and that was a stat that I think many people listening will kind of be gobsmacked at. I know I certainly was. We always see you at championships, but I think when you phrase it like that, it's very, very impressive as well, given this 1500 meter era we're in. That must be something you're proud of.
Yeah, I really wasn't aware of that stat either. I know I've always been someone that's been good at negotiating the rounds. I've ended up getting through them. The time that I didn't make a final was in Eugene World Champs, and of course I missed out by a hundredth of a second. I was really ill with COVID that week, etc. But I've always kind of prided myself on being able to get through the rounds. I think championship racing suits me a lot better than the sort of Diamond League type stuff. But yeah, I'm proud that statistic is the case. That obviously the 1500, since I started making finals, has gotten harder and harder, and so it seems like, you know, I'm still able to operate at the same level, but actually my level has actually been going up since 2019, more or less every year. It's just gotten harder and harder to make those finals and appear in those big ones. So although it seems like it's a sort of model of consistency, it's like actually I've had to raise my level most years just to be able to compete with how ridiculous the depth is on the global stage right now.
And how do you, this is referring to outdoors, how do you now go from a finalist to a medalist? That after the indoor season and even after Grand Slam, taking a few scalps in that 800, surely giving you a lot of confidence going into this outdoor season. I'm intrigued. Have you spoke to Josh and Jake about kind of how they've managed to become medalists from finalist to medalist and make that jump?
Yeah, it's the next step, and it's been what I've been looking at for a while. I mean, the easy answer I can give you is that if I stay healthy this year, I'm going to have a much better chance than I did last year. It can only be better than last year just based on the way this winter, this whole build-up's already gone. I still need to do that. That's still going to be a challenge from here until September. It's a really late year, so I'll need to be careful with what I'm doing. But at the moment, just operating in terms of the aerobic stuff, in terms of the way I've been competing at a different level, I think, than even last year. I am looking to make that jump. I think there were glimpses of it at Grand Slam, even not kind of feeling my best, you know, off a long season. I felt like I was competing quite well with those guys. Could have done maybe more in the 15 tactically, got it a bit more right. But, you know, you're always going to come away from races thinking I could have done this, could have done that. So that's always part of it. But I'm looking to bridge that gap and be a global medalist outdoors. Doing it indoors is one thing, and I felt like I closed well there and put myself ahead of some top quality athletes, but I'm aware that it's still going to have to be another level up for a medal outdoors. Yeah, I hope what I was showing at Grand Slam is a sign of that. Like, there were five guys that closed ridiculously quickly in that 1500 race. I think running 51 seconds for the last lap in a 3:35 race is pretty rare. Like, I know Jonathan Galt, one of the guys that is always a good reporter and knows his stuff, says he hadn't really seen anything like that before in a 3:35 race. My coach hadn't seen anything like that. I'm sure there's an example here or there, but yeah, it's just showing you the level just now, and Wanyonyi closing like he did was impressive, so maybe that's another factor. Like, we could see him in the 15 at some point soon, but those five guys were, closing at a pace that you don't see often. So just to be in there and having the quicker last lap, with a better positioning, maybe I could have done more with it. But yeah, it's good signs, is what I'm trying to say. In all that waffle,
not waffle. I mean, how good was it for you as an athlete to actually race Neguse, Hocker, Kurt? Like, because in a normal season, yes, you would toe the line with them, but you wouldn't race them in that scenario until you get to a major championships. The first time you're racing Kerr and without paces is probably British champs. And even there, you might not even get to race him. So how good was that for you? Because that's what you are at heart. You know, you are a racer.
Yeah, I loved it. Honestly, it was such a, yeah, it was such a breath of fresh air, standing on a line, not knowing how the race was going to go. When you step on the line with a pacemaker and you all get in line, as it normally happens a few times a season, you kind of know how it's going to go, and you kind of know where you want to put yourself. And there's not a whole lot of thinking involved with it. But tactically, yeah, you didn't know how this one was going to play out, and it was so refreshing to know that you were all going to have to do a bit of a chess match against each other. And I just love that kind of racing. Even in the 800, it's like, as much as we knew it was going to be quick, like, who's going to be the real aggressor in this, and how much of a factor is the wind going to play? Because it was like 7 meter per second wind, apparently. It was just, yeah, quite insane. I don't know how Marco ran 145 in that wind. I don't think the TV did it justice, just right, how good what he did was. Because he must be in goodness knows what shape just now. But that wind, I can promise you, during the day on Sunday was so strong. We got away with it Saturday night, but Sunday so strong. And it's all just all these factors that just make it interesting for me, rather than it being sort of predictable, which is more along the lines of what we know in the Diamond League circuit, that kind of thing.
I think predictable being the key word, because even the fact you guys doubled back with the 800, it was, it was like, yeah, how are people going to perform? How are they going to be feeling? And that was what was exciting as fans. You know, we couldn't really tell. It was like giving off that championship vibes. But were you surprised in the 800? How, you talk about, A-Rob just, flying along, and he was so strong. But were you surprised, you beat all the 1500 guys. Were you surprised by that?
I don't know if I was surprised by it. Honestly, coming off of it, I was a little bit annoyed with myself that I got caught racing those guys. I wish I'd committed to the 800 meter guys more. There were sort of two races that developed, mm-hmm. and I was a bit tentative. My legs did feel a bit fried that day, if I'm honest. And because of that, I just didn't get out as aggressively as I really should, because I do think, I could have lived with those 800 meter guys more. Marco, Emmanuel were kind of gone. I feel like I could have at least gotten the back of Bryce, and I'm annoyed that I didn't. But I feel like I do both events well. And when I came off of it, I was kind of disappointed at the way I ran. But then I thought about it, and I'm like, look, I was only beaten by first, second, and fourth at the Olympics last year in their event in the 800. So it's like, what are you going to do, really? It's not like I could sit there and say, oh, I wish I beat that guy. Like, I really should have. The level was so high just to come fourth. So, no, I suppose when all is said and done, I was pleased with it. Some of it was just like looking at the time and thinking, man, that's just not where I thought I was. But taking into account the wind, it was probably worth, I mean, I've no idea what it was worth, but it was certainly, it was a struggle both times hitting the home straight. I'll say that much.
So you talk about times, but was that not a little bit refreshing as well? Do you hope the sport now moves that way? Because we've gone polar opposite. We're all about times now. Do you hope we go back towards racing and actually where you finish is the most important thing?
I hope so. I mean, I always thought that 800 would have been quick just because of the people that were in it, and that's just how they like to run, and that's just strategy. But yeah, watching that 1500 and watching it back and listening to what other people said about it, who cares what time, we ended up running? It was just exciting down the home straight. Exciting watching someone that nobody thought was going to win end up out kicking all the, the Olympic podium for the 1500. Just exciting for spectators, I think. So I hope that there is a bit of a little bit of time away, or at least we come to the realization that time isn't everything, because the most exciting races we always see are at championships, and that's when time really shouldn't matter. I think there's a time and a place for it. I still think there is room for it. I think record attempts should still be a thing. Like, I think there's every reason for, you know, the odd occasion people should be going after record attempts, and when the time is right, like, totally makes sense. But I don't think it should be the focus every time we step on the track. I really do think the focus should be more on racing, and letting these races develop organically. And yeah, you end up getting a 1500 meters like you did on the Friday night, that I thought was just, yeah, really exciting to watch back. Even being involved in it, I remember, you know, seeing the footage back afterwards and didn't really realize how good it was until I watched it back later.
And I guess, like, you can analyze your own performances a little bit more as well, rather than just being, I just didn't have that extra second of fitness.
Yeah,
you can actually analyze tactically. But also, I'm intrigued. The racing was obviously different. There was no pacers. You had to do an 8 and a 15 in the same weekend. But how else was Grand Slam different for you? You know, you're someone who's been to Diamond Leagues. Was the experience different in and around competing, or was it very much the same?
It was a little bit of a different atmosphere in that I think it seemed more relaxed in a sense. I think in my event group and in other event groups, I think everyone's there knowing that they're going to get paid well as a result of it. They're going to put on a good show for the people watching on telly, the people that were there. I think at times on the circuit, there can be maybe a bit of caginess because it's, you know, you're competing against the same guys and you're waiting to hear what the pace is, and you've all got, you know, you've all got your eyes set on maybe some prize money that it maybe isn't, you know, so good all around. So it felt quite relaxed. Maybe that's just because it was in Jamaica itself, which is just, you know, the vibes in general are quite chill. But I thought everything was, you know, as I said, quite relaxed. There wasn't like a pressure of, look, we want big times out of you. These are the paces that they were keen to insist. We don't care. We just want you to race each other. What we want, and everything I was hearing from the people that are running was, we want you to perform your best. We want you to race each other. And whatever happens from that, we'll be happy. So I liked that kind of atmosphere. There wasn't like a sort of pressure for races to go a certain way.
And maybe the time of year helped with that as well, being in April, not having that same quite, you know, cutting edge. A listener question, someone sent in. Grand Slam, you were fifth overall, you took home $20,000. Is that the most you've taken home in a race before? Or from, I guess it was two races, wasn't it?
It would have been actually, but in the World Indoors a couple of weeks before, there's actually good prize money available for, you know, World Championship events. So I think second there was 40 grand in dollars. So it would have been, but for that. Actually, funnily enough.
Good couple of weeks for you then. That moves us on nicely, just shifting back to World Indoors. Now, you made an interesting comment after World Indoors. You know, you were quoted as saying, if you can't beat him, join him. And this is off the back of Europeans. I just wondered what you meant by that.
Yeah, I maybe didn't do a good job.
Yes.
Right, yes, yeah, no, I was absolutely referring to Jakob. I maybe didn't do a great job of explaining that. I think I was at the BBC interview I said that, I think. Yeah. Basically, the point I was trying to make was that oftentimes, particularly I was realizing at a European indoors, what happens when Jakob waits to move is that people go to the front or go wherever they go in the race, they'll spend the whole early part of the race looking over the shoulder thinking, right, when's the move going to come? And it's just not an effective way to race. You end up sort of racing so tense and tentative that first little bit, and you're like, all right, the move's now, and you react, and it's not efficient. And I saw so many people doing that at European indoors that the idea was, look, let's go to the back, let's track him so that I have momentum when he inevitably moves. I wasn't going to be the one to make the first move, so I was quite happy to just let him move when he wanted to, and just use that momentum. So that instead of reacting to his move, I was actually just fluidly accelerating kind of behind him. And that was the plan the whole time, was to come from the back like that. And I think indoors, the sort of best places you can be are either right at the front or right at the back often, because so much of the fighting that happens in the middle is a waste of energy, and you don't get much further forward from sort of fighting for the, you know, second, third, fourth, whatever it is. So that was the plan. It didn't go in entirely to script, but that's what I did, and I felt like it worked a lot better than trying to react and getting caught up in chaos when he inevitably moved and everyone just lets him do what he wants to do.
I feel like, you know, especially at European level, even though, you know, European is almost world level now, it's incredibly deep, but he does just have this aura, doesn't he? You talk about, you know, people sort of so tense and panicking whenever he moves. And for a lot, you know, for us watching, it looked like it was the rest of the field v. Jakob, but they were all fighting each other to try and get as close as they can with him. And even yourself, you got pushed around a little bit at Europeans. I think you could have easily come away with a medal. You just got pushed at the wrong time, didn't you?
Yeah, I hated what I did at Europeans, and I hated the way that everybody in the race kind of responded as well. Like, it was exactly how you said. It was like people were treating him with too much respect and just waiting for him to start the race, which ends up being that, you know, he does move and there's all this panic. And yeah, I got a good shove. I'm surprised I didn't go down. I felt like I was going to when Robert Farkin went down, but stayed on my feet. It was just a lot of energy to burn to then try and catch up again when he's already moving quick. Wanted to avoid that again. I don't think that's the case on a global level, but see, sometimes on a European level, I think people do just kind of let him do exactly what he wants, which, you know, I get why. I get why he demands that respect. But at the same time, I'm always trying to go in the race with the mentality of winning at World Indoors. The goal was absolutely to win. And the tactic that I employed to stalk him like that was to give myself the best chance at winning. Obviously, I respect how hard that is to do because he's one of the best to ever do this and he held me off. But yeah, that was the plan, was to do that to try and win the race.
It was great to see you bounce back and take that on board. And one of the other things about World Indoors is was it World Indoors you were the British captain?
Yeah, that was something unexpected.
Unexpected. You get voted in, right, to be the captain. Do you get voted?
Yeah, or? I don't know what the process is so much, but it's I think it was team staff that all kind of have a vote. So yeah, it's a really big compliment that some people on the staff definitely felt that I was a good fit for that. It was something that was actually kind of nerve-wracking because it means you've got to do a speech, etc. That was nerve-wracking to prepare for, but at least it was a small team. It was a really high quality team too, so it felt like the speech could be a bit more intimate. I suppose it would be a bit more personal, I'd call it. Not very broadcastable, but having a small team meant that I could kind of speak a bit more freely, I thought, which was good fun, actually. As nervous as I was, it went across well because sometimes you're thinking about things to say in your head and you're like, one, not going to get a single laugh, and two, people are going to be lost on this. What I'm saying here is either too much or not enough. And it went quite well. So that settled the nerves for me a little bit, getting that out the way before I competed.
No, that's good. But any other responsibilities being team captain, or is it just kind of do the speech and get to business, go get a silver medal?
Honestly, not really. Yeah, I mean, one of them, I suppose, was perform well. I can't go there as captain and not come back with something because that would just be a bit embarrassing. But the only thing really was to make sure that the team atmosphere was good. And I think it was. Having such a smaller team is a bit different in that you were quite close with all the other teammates that were there. Often it can be a bit clicky between event groups and stuff like that. People hang out with who they know, but it didn't feel like that, and everybody got along well. So it was important to me that was the case, and so I was trying to make sure I was speaking to everybody and finding out about their event, etc. So it was a good, and the championship ended up going well for us. We only brought, I think, 10 people and ended up with 4 medals, 2 of them gold. So actually a pretty good return from our little team.
Very good return. And talking of returns, when you returned, something which I've always noticed about you is you seem to make an effort to go back to your home club, you know, where it all started. You know, you took the medal back, you do a session. And I remember maybe it was a year or two ago, I saw you doing some cross-country session. You weren't running, but it was in a field somewhere and the club were clearly doing a cross session. And, you know, that I just think we don't see many professionals do that so much, but you seem to always make an effort. It's clearly important to you to go back to where it started.
Yeah, it's really important to me. I mean, part of it is that I still have such close links with a lot of the people that were my coaches and are still helping out, still giving up their time to help these youngsters come through. So because of that, it's so easy to say, look, I'm available this night, this night, this night. How can we, you know, make it happen that I can go along and speak to the kids? So I'll always do that, particularly when things go well. I've got a medal to show, whatever it is, because a lot of these youngsters, sometimes they're not even aware of what any of this means, but you bring along a shiny medal and suddenly it's really exciting, you know? So I always try and get back at least once when I'm home and come along for a session, all the age groups, and try and speak to whoever I can. I think it's important because I, to be honest, didn't have that growing up in the sport. Within Giffnock North, there wasn't kind of anybody who'd competed at the international level before. And even in Scotland itself, when I was growing up, there wasn't, you know, a huge amount of high-level athletes. That's changed now. And particularly in the middle distances, we've got so many high performers right now. So I think it's important that kids are able to see that close up and recognise that we aren't some superhumans that had all these advantages in terms of training growing up. We came through the same pathways, we came through the same clubs, whatever it is. And I know, like, Josh has done stuff with Edinburgh, and you know, Gemma's often back with Kilbark and that kind of thing. It's just important that we show that to the younger guys, because it's, like I said, it wasn't something I had growing up, and I want this kind of trajectory that we've been on to last. That's kind of important to me. I think if any kid is inspired, or, like, you know, is helped out by seeing it close up in the flesh, then it'll have been worth it for me. And then sometimes it's also just really entertaining, because you speak to the under 11s or the under 13s who don't understand it so much, and actually where you get the best questions. Like, there was a kid the other day asking, like, if I've got a private jet. Which is just like, yeah, stick in at athletics, because one day you might have a private jet. It was hard to disappoint him and say, actually, you're going to have to play tennis or golf really soon if you want that.
That's, goodness, that's brilliant. And is the club in a good place?
Yeah. They kind of go from strength to strength. They've got such huge numbers and waiting lists and what have you. The challenge for the club more is they've always had good youngsters. The challenge now is, like, how can we translate that to senior success and keep people involved in the club? And it started to happen with, you know, like, sort of Aaron Wallace has obviously been performing really well. Alison Bell, Murray Fotheringham, Alessandro Shinini, all guys that have been medalists at British Champs in the past little while. So it's really starting to happen. And I hope that continues and just goes strength to strength.
No, that's great. And you're back in the US now. And then, Matreet, how do you navigate the rest of the season? Is after Kingston, and it went very well off the back of the indoors, would you like to be in more Grand Slams? Even though they're quite condensed, aren't they, in this first half of the season? Are you going to have a bit of a break now, and we'll sort of see you in June, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I'd love to do more Grand Slams. I was invited to the Miami one, but it's just going to be too soon. I need a rest at the moment, and I need to prioritize that if I'm going to have success in September this year. So I've taken a few days off post this Grand Slam after this indoor season. I spent a few days at the beach in Montego Bay, up kind of the north side of the island in Jamaica, which was so what I needed. so that was a welcome retreat, because there were signs my body was really breaking down, and I just needed to get through one more weekend to be on the other side of it and get a few days off and let the body settle down all these little niggles I had. So yeah. It's been a little period of rest just now. I'll build things back up again and probably not race until. I'd like to do either one of Philly or LA in terms of the Grand Slams, but nothing's kind of been confirmed yet. That they're waiting to see a little bit. But yeah, I think there'll be more Grand Slam involvement from here on out. Plan would be to race at pre-classic as well. That'll be in July, and then yeah, see where we are from there, but that's the plan. Medium term.
London Diamond League, Kerr and Yak have been announced. So
potentially, yeah. You might see me there.
You might see you there as well. Just finish up. You know, you spoke about you were nursing a few niggles going into Grand Slam. Do you think that will play its part for the guys who have had to commit to all four?
It will be interesting. There's certainly some guys that won't be used to racing so much. I enjoy racing a lot. Everyone's got different approaches when it comes to that. And I respect, you know, people that don't feel like they're able to race as much and feel like they need to prioritize certain dates. But yeah, it will be interesting, because, like I said, throughout those event groups there are people that are racing a lot more than they would otherwise. So it will be interesting to see how they come off of it, because it's not that easy, and there are challenges about how you sort of organize your training around it. I don't mind training through racing, but it's more difficult than it appears, so it will be interesting. I'm sure though that it'll be a good thing just having those people face off as often as they are. That's really what sells me on the event.
Massively. And I guess a lot of your training, are you still, this is one of the listener questions as well, actually. Haas is your coach, right? And you're still following that sort of Ben Thomas model where you are operating at a lot of different speeds throughout the year. So the 8 and 15 lends itself quite well to you.
Yeah, so no, yeah, Haas is my coach. I'm still using a lot of the influence I've had from Coach Thomas because he taught me a lot. But no, I'm very much within this Under Armour group in Flagstaff, and we've got a really good group of guys now that is in the mid distances and beyond. Is just I'm never ever shown up to training and thinking, oh, I don't have the support I need here, or I don't have anyone to train with. It's such a good environment. There's great people around. So I am lucky to be in this situation in Flag, and I do think there's still room to grow in our group, and I think we've been on a good trajectory for a while. But yeah, going from strength to strength, and had a lot of Olympians last year, but I'd imagine that trajectory is going to continue, and Haas has done a really good job of assembling, a good group of people and some really talented athletes that have improved a lot in this past couple of years too.
No, the depth is definitely there for you guys. A couple more cues. These were sent in. Altitude, how important is it for even 15-8 guy like yourself to be living at altitude full time? The impact Flagstaff's had on you.
Yeah, I feel like I respond well to it. Everyone's a bit different, but it's gotten to the point now where there are very few, if any, athletes competing at the top level in the 15 right now who aren't using it. I can't think of any who would have been in that Olympic final last year that don't use it, don't take advantage of some of the benefits of altitude. With the level being so high, with the depth being what it is, I think people have realized that it's a marginal gain that they can get take advantage of. I seem to respond well to it, and I seem to be able to spend a fair bit of time here without, overdoing it. But that's just a case of figuring out what works, because equally you can overcook it quite easily if you're not careful. So it's been a learning process, but one I feel like between myself and Coach Stephen Haas, I think we've got a good grasp of what works and what sets us up well for running the 1500 in particular. And you're seeing that with a lot of good performances from our group too.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Just what does work for you?
It's really I think when some people see the way I race it, it feels like I'm more of a, I don't know, I do a lot of work on the anaerobic side, like it's a lot of speed, that kind of thing. It's just generally where my skill set is, but it's a very strength-based routine. Most of the time, what we're doing, the vast majority of it is, a good volume of threshold work. It's not this kind of new wave of double threshold Tuesday, Thursday type deal. It's not that. It's trying to get a lot of threshold work during the week, and whether that's on Sunday, whether that's like spending some time on the bike doing it as well. It's getting as many pieces as we can, doing a lot of hills. We'll do a hard hill session at least once every 2 weeks at least, and we really make that like a key point of the sort of base building phase. And then yeah, when it comes to a little bit more specific, when it comes closer to the time, there's a lot that I like from what I used to do with Ben Thomas. There's a lot that Haas and myself have discovered that we really like in terms of getting myself strong for races that we know are going to be hard from the gun. Some good VO2 work. It's a whole kind of puzzle, I suppose. But the biggest thing I'd say about the sessions that we do, even when we're getting more specific, is we try and touch on kind of everything. It's not really like there's a speed day and then there's a aerobic day and then there's like a VO2 day. Often we'll do sessions where like the first part of it is a tempo. We'll do some sort of specific reps. We'll end with a tempo. Might do some hill strides at the end as well. Like we're always touching on bits and pieces every session rather than doing separate pieces throughout the week, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely does. Final question. Do you watch running YouTube? There's a lot out there, and Jakob's got his channel, Kerr's got his channel, Whiteman's in and out of his. There's a lot to consume. Do you consume any of it as a professional? And if you do, sort of, how do you absorb it? How do you take it? Do you enjoy it?
I have to admit, I don't watch a whole lot of it, and I think that's because I'm consumed by it anyway. It's kind of my life. I think I'd enjoy it a lot more if I wasn't so involved in it every single day. So I don't find it that interesting, and I completely understand people that do. I like golf content on YouTube. I like some video game content on YouTube. I like stuff that's not running. It is more what I'm into. And I was actually speaking, funnily enough, you mentioned that, I was speaking to Jakob about this, funnily enough, in China. And I was telling him that actually I did watch his little car thing, because I'm like, if he had put out a YouTube video about his training, I 100% wouldn't have watched. But I wanted to see his car collection. I was talking to him about that, and he sort of said the same thing, is that that's why I wanted to do it, was because he doesn't have any interest in sort of watching running YouTube or like training content or that kind of thing. So that's why I wanted to put it out. So I was kind of fascinated by the cars that he did have, and he does have a hell of a collection. Having watched, he obviously is what he spends his money on, and he's it's good to see when people are a bit more well-rounded. It's the side of people that you maybe don't otherwise see, and I enjoy that more, if anything.
So what's your collection? You've got some collection of golf clubs, have you? Is that what you spend your money on?
I was gonna say, I don't think I have anything impressive like that. I don't have something that would be like, oh, there's this side to Neil that nobody knows about. Oh, I need to get on the golf course really soon. The weather's gotten good in Flagstaff right now, though, so I will be hitting the course as soon as I can, especially while the training's a little lighter at the moment. But yeah, that's my ideal in terms of free time. That's what I'd be doing.
Brilliant. Neil, mate, it's been a blast. Thank you very much. And yeah, look forward to seeing you compete this summer and hopefully be on a podium come Tokyo. Certainly in a good spot now. So yeah, thanks very much.
Not at all. Thanks for having me on.